this black hair. The man goes dance, you know she dances well.
Hey everybody, welcome to Drive Through HR. Brian, William, and Nisha on every single day, talking about HR with the folks that are out there helping get it done for the world. Well, let's get to our guests as quickly as possible. Mike Cook, welcome back to Drive Through HR.
Thank you. Great to be here.
And if you would, kick it off, introduce yourself to our listeners, and then we'll roll into kind of what's top of mind for you today.
Fantastic. Well, thank you for the introduction. My name is Mike Cook. I'm the CEO of a company called Brandon Hall Group, and we've been around for about 20 years now. We are a research and analyst advisory services firm, and our main goal out there is to help our clients drive business performance through what we see the most critical functions of an organization being, which includes HR and talent, executive management, learning, as well as sales enablement.
So, Mike, real quick on Brandon Hall. Well, we're going to have multiple questions on Brandon Hall. A lot of people think of Brandon Hall as an analyst group, like a Forrester, a Gartner, or like that. Are y'all, first of all, is that a miscategorization or a misrepresentation?
No, not at all. Actually, we're very excited to be in the analyst space, and we've been in the analyst arena for, it's actually our 20 or 21st year anniversary this year. So that's a very accurate description of Brandon Hall Group.
And so for some, you know, most people kind of, you know, they've interacted with Gartner or Forrester or any of those types of Meta or any of those types of folks over the years. Give us the world. What is an analyst firm this, you know, in today's world, in 2013? How do you interact with vendors, and how do you end up with engage with the practitioner world?
Right. Well, I think it's a, you know, very important question out there. Especially with analyst firms, because we see some of them, you know, certainly going away. So what we do is we're truly an analyst firm. So we're very independent. We're not on solution providers' boards, advisory boards. We don't have, you know, certified partnerships with vendors for technology implementation. What we're really doing, what we're really focused on, is we work with corporations. It's very important to everybody here at Brandon Hall Group that we keep our neutrality as an analyst firm. So most of our revenues really come through corporations, and we work with corporations to help advise them on technology, but also strategy as it relates to talent and HR.
Nice. Okay, so the cool thing is you're monitoring the vendors to make sure of what's going on, what's tracking, who's doing really well. And you're really interacting with the practitioner community. When you say companies, you're interacting with those practitioners and giving them advice around, you know, who to look at, who to buy from, how to negotiate, things like that, right?
Absolutely. We work with practitioners. We also work with the executive teams and C-level executives as well, as it relates to talent in HR. When you really think about it, everything is really a talent issue out there in the world.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. And HR cares deeply about it, but, you know, so should the COO and the CEO, et cetera. Well, let's because you've got a really cool vantage point. You work with a lot of – you're a CEO. You work with a lot of CEOs. What do you perceive right now as keeping HR up at night?
Well, you know, I've learned this very early in my career, in my 20s. It keeps coming back to me in my 30s and now my 40s. And, you know, really the number one thing I hear all the time, and I don't care what environment you're in, you can be in an entrepreneurial environment, you can be a three-person startup, or you can be a, you know, $20 billion, you know, global organization out there. You have to have great people in any environment. And I think what's keeping HR up at night, especially C-level executive CEO that I talk to on a daily basis, is really retention and acquisition, as well as the quality of hire. It's really a big global issue out there that has yet to be solved. I think the world's changing a little bit, but this is what we hear every single day.
Nice. Let's actually talk quality hire for just a second. How do we agree on what the definition of a quality hire is?
Well, that's a very it's a very good question. And, you know, William, I saw your blog earlier today about refs versus recruiters. I have to say it's, you know, very enlightening blog, really and enjoyed it. I think recruiters, out there in the HR, they have to really realize, how are they going to bring in talent? Because talent, you're also competing for it. So when you look at quality of hire, I think you have to look at a number of factors, number of variables. Number one, which many may be surprised, is you have to look at the culture. Are they a fit for the culture? Somebody that was a great sales VP or sales executive at a financial services firm may be a lousy sales executive at a software firm, and vice versa. So I think you have to look at culture. I think you have to contextualize the types of folks that you're trying to bring in. Certainly you can hire by gut instinct, but that doesn't work so well anymore. I think quality of hire is going to be enhanced the more organizations can start using assessments at the start, so that every candidate is playing on an equal playing field and there's no favoritism. The other thing I believe too is managers are not necessarily the best at hiring either, sad to say.
Nice. Let me, you're a CEO, you interact with a lot of CEOs, you also interact with HR. What should the relationship between the CEO, the C-suite, and HR be? Like, if you could just kind of wave a wand and prescribe what you think that relationship should be, what would it look like?
Well, you know what? There will be many people that disagree with me, but what I would like it to look like is what Yahoo's doing, for example, with her head of HR and Marissa Meyer. A lot of folks, when Marissa Meyer put out the memo saying no more working at home, went over really badly. But, and she took a lot of hits, especially from those in the HR community. What I saw, though, is I see her bringing in a senior HR executive and also putting her in charge of perhaps one of the most unique talent acquisition strategies that I've seen, as well as mergers and acquisitions. So I think that we've heard a lot, HR needs a seat at the table. I absolutely agree. I think Yahoo's been making great strides, and their stock price would show that they've been making great strides as well, too.
Interesting. Now, when I first met you, you were a sales leader, and you're obviously a company leader now, so you made the shift from a CSO to a CEO, let's say. What was the biggest learn for you in that moving from role to role? What have you learned from moving from a sales-centric executive role to the CEO role?
Well, it's strange because I've had a couple of different roles. So I started my career in my very early 20s, and my first role was to be an assistant to another assistant salesperson. And I had to work my way up, and I became basically a salesperson and did very well. And then later I started my first company, which was really a company about developing technology for publishers, as well as doing some consulting work for some financial service organizations. So I went from being sales to CEO, then I went back to being a CSO, and then I went to being a entrepreneur again, and then we acquired Brandon Hall Group. So that was about 2 years ago. So really, to answer the question, the most important thing, it's what I mentioned at the start of this call, you have to have great people. I've made so many mistakes earlier in my career where I try to find people that could just sit at a desk and code or call people, and one day it really just hit me. You have to have great people if you're going to succeed. You can't do it all by yourself as an entrepreneur or as a business leader. And that goes for folks in HR as well as C-level executives.
Nice. Let's play concepts that are ... hype or hot. So because you get to see the whole space and a wonderful vista in which to kind of see how everything plays out, you interact with a lot of concepts that are hype, and I won't tell you any of those, because I know you have your own opinions of what's hype. And there's also some concepts that, when you really separate, they're not just hype. They really are hot for a reason, and we should pay attention to them. So two or three, whatever you're comfortable with, what do you think that's out there that just, if you could retire the concept or the word or the buzzword or whatever, because it's just all hype, you'd love to do that. And maybe even some things that you really want to draw attention to because they're worthy of our attention.
I think one thing we should really draw attention to is, is HR technology really doing everything as advertised? And I'm not going to say it's hype or hot, but I think that we need to understand a little bit better that people are still underwhelmed by features in HR technology. We have research that shows up to 50% of companies are not satisfied with their current HR technology. And, you know, part of that, I think, is because people are expecting that having great technology, it's a replacement for having great people. And, you know, what happens is systems really only magnify some of the shortcomings that organizations have. So there's not enough talk about how to use the technology. I think there's too much reliance put on it oftentimes. And, you know, as a result of this, you know, I think what our research is showing is that organizations choosing technology as a more of a panacea versus choosing technology to meet the goals and objectives. So now we're seeing a fall down in user requirements, use case scenarios. And, you know, William, you know a lot about this as you do too, Brian, is, you know, less user adoption.
Right. What other concepts do you think that, you know, that are really hot that we should be paying attention? We should really, over the next couple of years, our lives will be more about whatever concepts that come out of your mouth.
You know, again, I have to go to thinking about retention. I was at the HR Technology Conference show last year, and the number one thing I heard time and time again was talent acquisition, talent acquisition, talent acquisition. Not once in 35 to 40 meetings over a span of 2.5-3 days there did I hear enough concern about talent retention and retaining employees. And I think it's super important. Acquiring new talent is not something that should be taken lightly. It's also very competitive. I'd have to say acquiring talent is one of the most competitive businesses out there. And I think the folks in HR, recruiters, C-level executives really do have to realize that. So I think that, you know, I would like to see more focus on retention. I think the normal rewards and recognitions process in HR is over now. So retention is not just about paying people really well, but you also have to provide flexibility in the workforce, and folks also want to be recognized not just by their leaders, but by their peers oftentimes as a subject matter expert.
Hey, Mike, let me do a quick reset. Everybody listening to Drive Through HR, William and Brian talking with Mike Cook from Brandon Hall. And so, Mike, can you continue on with what you were just speaking to. Do you feel there's really a skills gap that everybody is so talking about and challenged, and how it's going to bottleneck the kind of talent supply chain? Or is it just a completely toxic, inefficient kind of recruitment process that doesn't actually look internally and communicate internally to their own talent pool very effectively?
You know, I think it's a combination of both. I know in our skills gap research, especially around healthcare, high-tech manufacturing, we're seeing 83% of organizations are saying it's difficult to find skilled employees, whether it's internal or external. And I think that's really important. It's one of the reasons why CEOs tell us that they need HR to be better aligned with the business. And I think that's far better than it was 2, 3, 4 years ago. But I still think we have a long ways to go with it. And when you look at healthcare, manufacturing, high tech, I mean, there's a lot of different changes going on within those industries, whether they're looking for highly degreed individuals, younger employees, which is difficult. You know, also, when you think about talent, for us, you know, the way we view things at Brandon Hall Group, talent has an expiration date. It's like a gallon of milk is how we look at it. And if you don't nurture that talent, and you don't think about nurturing that talent, it quickly goes away. The other side of that is when you're an organization, you're hiring, you know, 1,000 younger millennial folks, you know, ages 24 to, say, 30, you know half of them at least are going to be leaving within a couple of years for one reason or the other. No matter how great or how poor their manager is, they're most likely going to be leaving. So how do you juggle the investment in those folks, knowing that they're taking your investment out the door within 18 to 36 months?
Well, and to continue on with that, why should anybody listen to a mobile conversation when they can't even fill the recs they have now? There's got to be a reason. I just don't know what it is.
You know, it's a difficult one. I mean, you see a lot of, you know, when we talk about mobile and we talk about, you know, social, all the vendors, all the providers out there, they have social and mobile tools. I'd have to say maybe 15 to 22% of organizations are actually implementing these tools. Some are having some really good success at the same time. But, you know, we also have to think about, you know, mobile is more than just, you know, device friendly and a channel to drive learning or HR or recruiting through as well, too. So it's, you know, it's difficult. I think we just have to get better at recruiting and knowing how we're going to acquire talent, but also how are we going to keep it fresh and how are we going to keep developing it as we go on.
Michael, I want to get your take on the bring your own device movement. What do you see in the marketplace, and what are your just kind of your initial thoughts on kind of that whole movement?
Well, you know, initially, even going back a year or 2 years ago, what the world was thinking was, you know, iPhone, iPad, Android, smartphone, you know, tablet, it's all the same content. Just, you know, it's mobile and, hey, it'll work on an iPhone, it'll work on an iPad. Great, you have mobile. But what we're seeing is that, you know, for, you know, and I'll just say the iPad or tablet, for just to make it a little bit easier, you know, more engaging content, more capabilities are developed on a larger device like an iPad or a tablet because it's meant to be a little bit more interactive. I can surf on my iPhone quite well, and I do have an iPhone on the internet, but I'd rather surf on my iPad. It just makes better sense. Whereas an iPhone may be better for, you know, static information, getting just what you need. So typically, I'd say, you know, smartphone content is a little bit more static. That's what we're seeing out there, whether it's for HR, whether it's for learning, whether it's for looking up your sales via mobile CRM.
Do you think that it leads, this bring-your-own-device movement leads to more employment law, more in policies or data policies, et cetera?
Well, I think we're going to have to be very flexible, and I think a lot of corporations have tried to regulate what's on their employees' smartphones so far, and I don't know if that goes over quite so well. But to answer your question, there will be some regulation, but I think it's really going to be up to the individual companies and their IT departments about what they do and how they regulate access to these devices.
All right, you get a question that I get a lot in terms of HR technology, and that's best of breed versus suite. And how does one, you know, on the executive level or HR, how do you make the decision of do I go with the point solutions that are just the best in their particular category, or do I go to a suite of products that might not be the best, but they're a suite, hopefully all on the same code base, et cetera? What's your best advice for folks that have those questions?
Well, I think there's a couple of things that come to mind, right? And what we see in our research is what companies are most concerned with and what CEOs tell me, it's always very similar. It's not always about the technology. Number one, know what your goals are for the organization. What are the objectives, right? Number two, when it comes to technology and integrating new systems or implementing new systems, the word on people's mind is integration. You know, how is this going to integrate into my ERP? How do I make sure this is going to be leveraged? Does this truly meet the needs of my organization? And, you know, a question that's not asked enough is, why am I doing this? You know, what does success look like at the end? You know, my brother-in-law, who runs a very successful logistics company, always gives me this advice, and it's the best advice I've heard, is, you know, begin at the end and work your way backwards. And that's what we have to see people do with these new technologies and whether or not they should go with a suite or best of a breed.
Nice. Really, as a piggyback to integrations, what do you feel with your research? What do you feel that we get right with integrations, and what do you think that we have, and what do we get things that are wrong with integrations?
Well, I think we don't do enough use case scenarios. We don't understand what data we're necessarily looking for. We just know that it can collect lots of data. We know the systems can speak to each other. You know, with integration, I think that it takes a very long time to get everything right and organized. And I also think sometimes what we see, organizations buy off on a whole suite of so-called integrated offerings in the HR or talent management realm, and what they find is they don't use all the features within the first year. It's really the 20-80 rule. They may use 20% of the modules that they have acquired. So my advice would be, yes, find your vendor that you think is going to have the right answer and everything's integrated, but you don't have to buy off on the whole suite right away. It's only going to add extra complexity to what you're trying to accomplish. They should really focus on the core application they're acquiring, master the basics, and go from there.
All right, let's pivot over to implementations. What's the research tell you about I don't want to deal with the failure points because I think everyone knows what a successful implementation looks like, but
mm-hmm.
where do you start to see some of those typical roadblocks or speed bumps in implementations?
Well, you know, a lot of times it's internal resources with an organization. It's the biggest roadblock is not having, and I know this sounds perhaps silly or odd, but not having a clearly thought-out project management plan, not having, you know, truly having resources assigned to the implementation, and also not enough planning on how you actually go about the implementation and what it looks like. And there's some organizations that will go ahead and implement without even doing, at times, a pilot. You can't expect to do a 100,000-person, you know, user-based implementation without having major issues. So why don't you start small with a small division or a small pocket of users and go from there? That's what we see all the time.
Wow. I want to get your take on analysts, moving from an analyst, pure analyst position to a vendor position. And in our beloved space, we've seen this a number of times. I mean, I can count at least
mm-hmm.
10 analysts that I know that used to be at an Aberdeen or
mm-hmm.
a Gartner, et cetera, and then had moved over to a vendor. And, again, it's right to work. You can work wherever you like. But you represent a wonderful analyst firm. What's your take, and what kind of feedback do you get from folks about, with vendors, they're giving you a lot of information. Some of that
mm-hmm.
might even ride the line of proprietary information or knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden you pop up and you're with vendor A. What's your take on that?
You know, I don't like it, is my take on it. Everybody is welcome to work where they're, you know, of course they have to go to. What we hope is that the analysts that move on to, you know, solution providers, certainly they have NDAs. Our folks have NDAs, confidentiality agreements, and hopefully they have the integrity and they can maintain that integrity so that they're not using information they shouldn't be using. You know, in the analyst world, there's a great, I think there was a blog somebody put out recently about the kind of the age of the rock star analyst being over, where in the days, you know, in the old days, you hire a rock star analyst, you pay them a lot of money, clients love speaking to that rock star analyst, and then the analyst goes out and they, you know, stop their own business or they go to a solution provider. The problem with that, when they stop their own business, first of all, it's not as scalable. You know, what we're trying to do at Brandon Hall Group, what I think we've done successfully, is make sure it's the company and all the resources we've put into it, all the investments, make sure those investments translate into adding client value. That's the most important thing. And for our own analysts, they're free to go where they would like to, but we try very hard to make sure we are retaining them and developing them on a daily basis as much as possible.
Nice. As you look across all the voices that are in the space, you've got consultants, you've got practitioners that have great voices, vendors, analysts, you've got all this tapestry of these wonderful voices that add value to our ecosystem.
Hello, did I lose somebody?
I can hear me. Brian, can you hear me?
William, I can hear you, and your voice is quite profound,
hello.
I might add. So, well, we'll get it figured out.
Hey,
and,
Mike.
Mike,
can you hear us?
I can hear you now. Yes.
Okay. Good. Well, the question was basically around who do you listen to when you look across all of the ecosystem and all of these different voices. Who do you have the finger on the pulse of? Like, who are you listening to these days? And I'm not looking for specifics as much as I really like hearing these types of voices.
Well, you know, for number one, for me, building an analyst firm, what we listen to is we like to listen to our clients. I say it all the time. We have done everything possible to build this business from the outside in. In other words, we look at it from a standpoint of, you know, what type of firm would our clients like to do business with and what do they want us to deliver? So first off, it's always clients. In terms of other folks we look at organizations that have been lasting organizations for nearly 100 years, firms like McKinsey and how they built their brand and how they conduct their own breed of research on how they deliver client value. We also look outside of the consulting and analyst industry as well to get, you know, other insights on how high-tech firms may approach certain parts of building their business.
Nice. Well, Mike, what's the most intriguing aspect of big data for you? When you look at big data, and hell, if I had a nickel for everybody that talked about big data, I'd be a billionaire. But the thing is when you look at it, and you look at 18 months or a couple years, mm-hmm. what's the most intriguing aspect of big data for you?
Well, for me, I think it gives businesses really something that they haven't necessarily had, you know, in previous generations. I think it gives them data and gives them more of a research-driven mindset to make decisions that actually will impact business. So I think they can actually correlate. If they do A, B, and C, then the outcome will be X, Y, and Z. And if they don't do A, B, and C, then the outcome won't be as good as X, Y, and Z. You know, the other intriguing aspect of it is, you know, what data do you look at? You can't look at millions of data elements necessarily, but what you can do is you can cluster and group those elements of the data together to make more predictable business decisions with predictable outcomes.
Well, and Mike, we've got about 3 minutes left. So, you know, especially leading, kind of being a voice and presenting that to, you know, to across multiple industries, where do you kind of draw inspiration from? I tend to ask this question a lot because I think it's fascinating. I mean, do you read? I mean, is it something that, what's something of late that you draw some inspiration that maybe has changed some of your strategy?
Well, you know, I have a book on my nightstand. You know, I always go back to it whenever I need to get back to, you know, the basics or just thinking about different things, and it may surprise you, but actually Atlas Shrugged by Ayn Rand, the whole objectivism philosophy movement, you know, something that I appreciate. And I think there's a lot of principles in that book that has made me think about, you know, a lot of different things, like you need to hire people that are really great and competent, and you need to rely on facts to make decisions, not necessarily emotions or gut instincts. And that's a lot about what Atlas Shrugged is about, actually. I don't know if you two have read it, but it's a fantastic, fantastic book.
Well, that's I appreciate you sharing that. Where are some places, kind of last question, where are some places that Brandon Hall is going to be at through the next few months that people might see the group, run into you, say hi, maybe some of the analysts? What about that?
Well, we'll be at about 20 different conferences this year. So you will see us at the Mercer event in June. You'll see us in London. We're scheduling our fourth trip now to London in September at the Learning Live event. We will, of course, be at HR Technology this month. I'll also be at Silk Road and a couple of other places. And if anybody's there, would love to meet up and have a cup of coffee or even a drink. So please feel free to contact me.
Well, luckily, the majority of our listeners are not opposed to both coffee and a drink, possibly at the same time, I might add.
Who would have thought?
So, yeah, shocking. So, well, thank you so much for coming on with us. Continue the great content you guys, the voice that you have at Brandon Hall. We really appreciate that. I definitely do. I've been following for a long time, and we're good to go today, folks. Thank you for tuning in, and
thank you.
We will talk to you tomorrow. Thanks, Mike.